Okay, and here we go. One, two, three. And welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode, I have no idea. That's 20,
20-something.
Isn't it 29? I think it is. Hold on.
age 29.
We were getting other things together, and we got messed up there. Hold on.
Well, in the meantime, it's
no, you know, actually, it's 28. We're 28.
28. Oh.
All right.
Cool. All right. I just want to say, I think it's cool that sometimes I feel like we record in a vacuum. You know, we do this. It's like, okay, cool. I love talking with you guys every week on the comic stuff. It's a ton of fun. But it's like, are people listening? And then every once in a while, we get these comments back from people about the episodes. And it's like, okay, yes, we are, in fact, connecting with other people out there, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. So. Anyway, this is going to be a comic talk because we all had I had a rough week and didn't think of anything until like yesterday. So, and I know Caleb there hasn't been feeling all that great. So,
yeah, no, that's me.
So, anyway, episode 28. Sorry about that. Professionalism is out the window. But, well, I mean, I know we're always right up there with that, so. Anyway.
the pay is commensurate with the return, okay?
Yeah, that's it. That's right. Exactly. You get what you pay for. If you laugh, great. If you don't, well, that's too bad. One of the things that's been coming up a lot lately is lawsuits involving creators and comic books and the companies that publish them and all that wonderful stuff. We talked about a little bit last week in weeks previous about, you know, the Ghost Rider lawsuit, which, by the way, I was looking at the Steve Nas webpage and they're just getting all kinds of support. Gary and his wife are pretty happy, so they're trying to get back to all the emails and everything that everybody, you know, sent and everything. So that's good stuff. I plan on contributing a little bit since I got paid on Friday. Once I get a chance. Let's see. We had a lot of number sixes. What? Go ahead.
Am I allowed to play devil's advocate here a little bit? I mean,
go right ahead, man.
I appreciate that. Okay, so it sucks. The guy worked his ass off. I get it. I think that's I think it's bad that Marvel felt the need to not share in the profits from the movies. You know, even though apparently the new one sucks as well as the old one sucked.
Yeah, that's what.
But you know, this guy. He kind of brought it on himself.
I have to admit. From what I read, I think I have to agree with you. Go continue.
No, I mean that's what I mean. He went in, you know, eyes open. I mean, the lawyers must have told him, hey, you know, look, you have a chance of winning, you have a chance of losing, and if you lose, there's a countersuit that exists. I mean, the countersuit didn't just come up at the last minute. That was according to the documentation. That's been in existence since he filed his suit. Mm-hmm. They filed a countersuit against him. This was years ago. This is not like this thing started in December of 2011. This has been around for 3-5 years, something like that.
I think I read 2007 is what Joe had said. Joe Quesada.
So it sucks, and I think creators from the 60s and the 70s have taken it up the butt royally, you know, in terms of royalties. Mm-hmm. But legally this did not come as a surprise, and he should not. And I feel bad for him, but again, I'm playing devil's advocate. I believe in creators' rights from
right. And from what I read, what he had done was making like stuff of his own, and. That was Ghost Rider, and selling those with his signature on it. And from what I remember reading in, you know, Quesada and whoever else was talking there, that they have no problem with him taking something that Marvel made with Ghost Rider on it and selling it with his signature on it, but not something that he has produced or had produced. Which,
The had produced, because I don't think it's his artwork. It's
yeah, because he was a writer, he wasn't an artist. So
yeah, it's the fact that he was doing prints of someone else's cover, right. and then selling multiple. Like I think there's the two issues, right? Like there's the he wants to be acknowledged as the creator issue, which is one thing, and that's kind of almost separate from the. The other thing of him kind of infringing copyright or whatever and just making prints and prints and prints of
right
of something. Like I don't know, like people get are all worried about con season and sketches and stuff. I don't think it's the sketches that Marvel is worried about. Like I don't think they're concerned about the one-off sketches.
Yeah.
It's
fine.
Like making a print of something, multiple copies of it, and then making money off that single image, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it's also in conjunction with him saying, hey, I'm also the creator of Ghost Rider. You don't think there's a isn't that part of the issue?
See, I didn't catch that being like that, but it was possible because I remember in the quote that Quesada said that – you know, he wasn't the only creator. They went out of their way to make that point, so that might be part of it.
Yeah, like, I mean, if he hadn't poked the dog with his lawsuit stick, they probably wouldn't have decided to come after him with the countersuit. So, right. You know, like, it's connected, but connected but separate.
Yeah, and though I can kind of see where some creators, because the way that I've read it, I can see where if they wanted to, Marvel could go after those people that are doing the stuff, the one-off sketch, if they wanted to. So that's what I think people are afraid of, you know, that with that precedent being set, you know, whether that's really a valid precedent or not, that would have to happen in a lawsuit. And I can see, well, okay, if I draw this, am I going to get sued later on? That's just, you know, whether that's actually valid or not, it's a whole other story.
So they should all just put a little copyright Marvel at the bottom of all their sketches.
It's very possible. That might help. Let's see.
There was something else on Bleeding Cool, kind of related. I don't remember the artist's name, but he did like a really cool ABC using Wolverine, I think. Wolverine or the X-Men. I think it was Wolverine. Like it's a... I don't know if it was a print or like a sketchbook, but he was also told, like he wasn't selling it at one point. He was giving it away for free and he was even giving it to Marvel editors and stuff. And they seemed to have really liked it. But, at some point he started to sell, like I think he did a print run of 200 and when he was down to like 40 left, he decided to sell the last couple. And that's when he got a call from Marvel saying, we're not really okay with this. Like he owned up, like he agreed right away that what he was doing was on the shady side of the gray. and so he stopped, and he doesn't bear Marvel any ill will. Like he gets it, but again, it shows that if you're gonna make a print of something and then make multiple copies of it, you could be. Mm-hmm. You could be on the wrong side of that gray area.
Seller beware.
Totally.
Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah.
I remember I worked at a comic book store back in the mid-80s, and it was called Superior Comics. It was in Costa Mesa, and we decided that we were going to make the logo with the S as the Superman shield.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually got a call from DC, this is pre-Warner days, but saying don't do that.
really?
Huh. Yeah. They were not happy. We had to go and repaint the side of the building to get rid of it. We figured, you know what? Like the guy with the book, you know, so like, you know what? Why? What's the point? You know, we can change the S. It's still going to say comics on it. No harm, no foul. And Let's not piss off the big money maker, the big the people with the big
the dough.
Yeah.
Big pockets. There we go. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. let's see.
So you know what? He it sucks what's happening to him, and I hope that they are able to collect the money to pay Marvel. It looks like they're going to.
Yeah, I don't see them having trouble coming up with 17 grand with everybody backing.
No, but my sympathy level is medium.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, lukewarm. So, but Marvel's PR took a slam for that one, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Anyway, let's see. Surprisingly enough, Newsarama this week put up a top 10 major creator disputes throughout comic book history. We could go through that list and maybe just talk about it a little bit. But let's see. Number 10 is The Walking Dead, and we've already talked about that. And it's like, you know, I said – no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I watched the episode last Sunday, and it doesn't say created by Tony Moore. It just says series from or something like that during the credits.
Oh, okay. I forgot to look.
So it actually, I paused it. It just says it says Tony Moore as part of the credits, but not as created by. It says a series by or something like that.
Yeah, I think the major thing is, you know, he's supposed to get a certain amount, and according to him, they're not showing him how much the total profits is, so he can't tell if he's getting exactly what he is supposed to get. Which, if that's true, then I can kind of sort of understand. If you look at any of those Kirkman, you know, when he was in it, Moore was in it, it says he's a creator, and, you know, Tony Moore is, you know, just the artist, whatever. And to me, it's like, okay, he did 6 issues, and that's all he's ever done. But they're childhood friends, so whatever he's given Tony out of that, if he is the sole creator, is out of the kindness of his own heart. So that's kind of, I don't know.
You just did this comic, right? You got this artist. You paid him to do what was it, 10, 12 pages that you did in your book?
5.
5, okay, I'm sorry. So you paid him for 5 pages.
Right.
But it's your creation.
Mm-hmm.
Did you give him creator credit, or is he just – he's work for hire and his 5
pages?
He's
the artist. That's it, yeah.
So, you know, he can sell –
Now, the problem that I had, and I should have done a contract with him, but he was from Spain, and there was a little communication gap there. But I have plenty of emails. You know, he did the stuff. I paid him, and from that point on, his – you know, it's out. It's done. So
he can sell his 5 pages. He can make, you know, a little extra money that way. But
yeah,
as long,
yeah. I'm sure there's going to be a big call for that when I make it big.
There you go. But I mean, no, I'll joke. I mean, that's
no. You're right. Yeah.
I mean that's how Walking Dead started. That's how Tony Moore and Kirkman got started. They said, okay. Back then, it was, you know, he did the pages for free. I'm sure, you know, when they first started working together, but. The point is that it was Kirkman's creation, and
in my case, I created the character as kind of that game City of Heroes, an MMO. I created it in that, and those files that I sent him to help with the design were from screenshots that I took. You know, this is what I will, and those have dates on them. So I mean, if something ever came out of it, I could proof, I think, pretty easily that was me, and he just drew what I gave him. So, but anyway, that's just, you know, my take on it anyway. Who knows? I might have totally screwed myself.
But then it becomes a question of, you know, do you do what's morally, or, you know, or do you do what's legally right? And that's kind of where that's where Marvel is right now with the Ghost Rider thing, and that's where you know, Kirkman needs to figure out, has he already done the moral part by giving Tony Moore anything?
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like legally he has anything to worry about. It's whether morally he does.
Yeah, and I don't think I've seen any contracts that they have. So, I mean, that's up to the court to decide whether he actually has a lawsuit. So, it's sad that it gets to that.
I think it's got to be more, though, than just Tony Mora's work for hire, because there is that contract where Kirkman brought to Mora to have him sign it so that they could proceed with the TV show. Like, there's
right.
So there's
something there that needed to be done.
Yeah, like, it's more than just I'm the creator, you're the penciler, because otherwise I can't see why he would have needed to bring this contract forward to get signed for the TV show and to guarantee more certain percentages of the book and of the does it say the movie rights or whatever however that's worth. Like,
yeah,
there's more to it, I think, and I am looking forward to seeing how it all plays out.
Yeah, there's actually the link on Newsarama links to it. They actually did a write-up in Forbes magazine on the 15th about it. I haven't read it through at all, but it talks about it a little bit here and there, just a couple of pages. It is, that's brought some major attention. So.
Mm-hmm. So maybe it's the other way. Maybe, again, it'd be interesting to read that article, but maybe, and I'm totally, totally supposing here. This is made out of whole cloth. I'm making this up as I go.
Right.
But, what if Kirkman said, you know what, if you want any piece of this, Tony, you have to sign this contract, because if you don't, you're not going to get anything.
Right, right. And if that's the case, that goes along with what he said about being, pushed into it or whatever. I don't know. I remember how he worded it exactly.
Right.
So.
How long has this particular lawsuit been in place? Because
I would say less than a month.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Wonder why it took that long. Huh.
I don't know. Maybe he. Well, I mean, they grew up together, childhood friends. I read so. Maybe he Tony felt like he's done everything he could, and there was no other recourse.
That's kind of the impression I got. Like, he had tried to get to look at the books previously, and this was like this was the only this was the final step he had to take to kind of get like other attempts hadn't worked. So now he has to go this route, but. But again, until we are able to read more of it or hear more of it, it's all kind of speculation. I'm waiting for the National Enquirer to get a hold of it.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome.
Speaking of that, here's number 9 on their list. You got Ghost Rider, Blade, and Howard the Duck. It says, three of Marvel's comics to movies characters have been the subject of much publicized lawsuits that made waves among the industry and fans. Howard the Duck was a lawsuit that started in 1980 with Steve Gerber wanting creative control of the character. The agreement between Marvel and Gerber over the disagreement was not made public. Now, didn't Steve Gerber, didn't he pass away?
Yes.
That's the one that did that Dr. Fate thing? Yeah, okay,
yeah,
I thought
so.
Okay, see. Over a decade later, when Blade was set to hit movie theaters in 1998, creator Marv Wolfman filed suit, alleging that he had not been bound by any work-for-hire contract when he created the character in 1972. Although he later lost the suit, the case showed fans that successful superhero movies do not necessarily benefit the writers and artists who created the character. And then they talk about Ghost Rider. It's just chatter over the issue. Has been renewed this week on the eve of the theatrical release of the film Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. This time, writer Gary Friedrich's lawsuit over his rights to the character got a strange legal ruling, blah, 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 which we already talked all about all that. And while Friedrich's lawyers will appeal the ruling, it has worried some comic creators that they can't sketch or sell merchandise featuring the character they created, or a publisher may sue them. That's the thing. Okay, now this one I didn't – here's an interesting. Vampirella, which – Vampirella, excuse me. I don't. Is any of you guys have any experience with that character?
None that I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, I see. Okay, but I've never really. I mean, back in the when I was a youth, I can see the allure of this character, but now it's like, why. But anyway, More than one company has wanted to sink their teeth into Vampirella.
Oh, that's
what I said.
Stop.
Yeah. Yes. I didn't write that. I'm just reading. And as Future kept lawyers busy over the years, when the publishing company that originally owned Vampirella went bankrupt in 1983, Harris Publications acquired the company's assets, including Vampirella and other properties like Creepy and Eerie. Over a decade later, 1999, James Warren sued to get back the rights. A few legal battles later, Vampirella stayed with Harris, and although Warren got Creepy and Eerie. Lovely Vamp's troubles didn't end there. At 2007 convention, Fangoria Comics executive editor Scott Lucinda was instructed by one of the officers from the corporate parent company to announce that Fangoria had acquired Vampirella from Harris. Unfortunately, while Fangoria was indeed trying to negotiate for the character, the deal wasn't done, and the premature announcement killed it. But Vampirella did eventually move on to its present publisher, Dynamite, which apparently they sell a lot of those. I have no idea.
Dynamite has Vampirella.
No oh, yeah. You didn't know that? Yeah, that's been going on for a while.
Wow. Like
2 or 3 years at least.
I wrote a Vampirella story once.
Really?
Yeah. Back when they took submissions from everybody.
Ah.
Mine wasn't purchased.
Oh, well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Rejection is terrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let's see. Number 7, DC versus Burns Publications. When DC had just started publishing Action Comics with a new character named Superman, it didn't waste any time protecting the asset. In 1939, DC sought an injunction to stop Burns Publications from publishing its Wonder Man comic, drawn by the legendary Will Eisner. While Burns and even Eisner himself claimed in court that Wonder Man was invented before Superman, DC won the case and the Wonder Man was no more. The result of the lawsuit was important not only for its protection of DC's property, but also because it likely encouraged DC to file its later lawsuit against Fawcett. More on that later. Number 6, Alan Moore.
Wait a minute, so Will Eisner did a straight Superman type book? Wow.
Yeah, I'm showing a picture here. I'll send you the link here so you can all follow along at home.
He looks like Dr. Solar.
Yeah, yep. He does kind of.
I just never had seen Will Eisner do anything straight superhero-y. I always think
that was it. And that's probably what killed it right there. I'm not doing it anymore. Let's see, Alan Moore, DC Comics is gearing up to publish dozens of Watchmen prequel comics later this year. Which the more I see the one that Dwayne Cook does, the Minutemen. I don't have any problem with that one. I think that's
Darwin Cook,
yeah. But Alan Moore, the writer who came up with the original story, still claims the company quote unquote swindled him out of the publishing rights when he signed DC's quote unquote draconian contracts for both Watchmen and V for Vendetta. Pardon me. The writer's disdain for DC's treatment of his characters has been the focus of heated debates between comic book fans for years. But it reached a fever pitch when Watchmen prequel was announced last month. Yeah, we talked about that already. He told the New York Times that the prequel is, quote-unquote, completely shameless. But unlike most of the disputes in the list, Moore's goal is not the riches behind the rights, but instead the integrity of his creation. Yeah, well, anyway, he's a little off-kilter, in my opinion. But anyway, I don't want money, he said. Of the Watchmen prequel, what I want is for this not to happen. Altruistic approach isn't surprising considering his role in the dispute about, and I'll go to the next one, Marvel Man and Spawn.
Well, I want to go back to the Watchmen thing.
Yeah, that's fine.
Draconian? Come on.
Well, okay. Now, look, I love Alan Moore stuff, and I think you guys you probably agree, most of it, anyway. But if you've looked at him lately, I think he's either had too much drugs or he's just crazy. Now, I might be wrong in my assumption, but that's just my opinion anyway. And he might be a genius writer, but he's just strange.
He wrote a story about a woman having sex with plants, so I think I've said in terms of whether he's weird or not.
Well, that could be the next Impulse limited series, or I mean Image limited series. I mean
Impulse. Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
that's a whole other thing. But
we did in Swamp Thing. He did the whole
yeah.
Abigail having sex with plants.
Well, you heard about the story that the limited series that Image did, or at least I think it was a one shot. Actually, it was called "Our Love Is Real." You heard about that?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Marie. I think it's like set in the future, and the sexually transmitted diseases have gotten so bad that there's like a ban on having humans having sex, so they start having it with animals.
And other things, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even going to do a search on that. So anyway.
I just did. I did. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Plant sexuals riot in the streets for equal rights.
Yeah, same.
Humans fall in love with dogs, and crystals are more than just jewelry. A chance encounter. Never mind. I'm done. Okay.
Okay. Wow. See, so, you know.
Wow.
And
it's got really good reviews, though.
Well, like I'm not gonna read that. I read Chew eventually, but that seems to be. That's how you get it in comics. Is something you find some kind of gimmick that nobody's thought of, which those two are perfect examples, or just something way out there that just like, oh my god, this is so out there. I've got to read this, and that's what Our Love Is Real is anyway. And
it's worked because that
yeah, he's got a couple of gigs out of it.
Yeah, he's going to be writing the Ultimates with Jonathan Hickman, and yeah. Then he'll be taking over from Hickman on the Ultimates. So.
Yeah, so
okay. Plant sex is the way in, apparently. Yes.
Future creators, bear this in mind. You have to be wild. Mm-hmm.
Just getting back to Moore for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
Please.
We got a slight detour there, but his contract, I don't know. Like, I'm sure I'm not going to be a big Moore defender. I think he's a whack job, but he probably has a point, right? Like he signed this contract thinking that his book would eventually go out of print and then he'd get the rights back to it. And
right. That is a point. Yeah.
DC and Marvel, nobody knew, or Marvel, Moore, neither of them knew that this book was going to go on and be in print like forever. Mm-hmm. So like he couldn't, like nobody could have envisioned that at that time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know that it was a draconian contract so much as it was, this is what the contract is at the time, and mm-hmm. and it sucks that DC hasn't made any overtures to change that contract in the meantime. Like that would have been probably the nice thing to do, right? Like, hey, we've got this $1 million mega book here that's yeah. gonna make us
well,
forever, and we're gonna stick to the letter of the law here. Like, I get it, I get yeah. why he's angry, but.
Well, now they did.
But he said it's not about the money. I mean, yeah, he's right there. He, whatever. It is. It is about the money. He can. You know. It
well,
is.
Now, well, okay. I can see that. Now I have read, and I mean Dave Gibbons can back that up. That according to Alan Moore, DC or Warner Brothers had Gibbons talk to him, and this was a big long. Rambling thing I read that Alan Moore wrote about how it was right around the time the Watchmen movie came out that they were offering him the rights back if he did sequels. And he told them not only no, but hell no. So when you want to call that an attempt to change the contract or not is just depends on your point of view. But they know they're trying to make more money off of this, you know. And the only way Alan Moore will participate is he has complete and total control. Now, whether that's, you know, he signed the rights over.
So he gets – so DC Warner, they get a win-win out of this because
yeah.
not only are they now going to do the sequels, they're going to do – it looks like some quality sequels without Alan Moore involved. Granted, it would have had a lot more cachet – with Alan Moore on there, but Darwin Cook, for goodness sake, Adam Hughes, for goodness sake, not Trina Robbins, what's her name? Power Girl drawer. I'm blanking on
Amanda Connor?
Yeah. Amanda Connor. I mean, it's not like they're going for, you know, Joe Schmo off the street or Sam Humphries to write plant stories. I mean, they got some quality, so it's a win-win. You're right. They put out their hand. They said, here, look, we'll meet you halfway. Just, you know, write a couple more stories. Dilute the product, whatever, but, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, Alan was severely insulted by that and says he's no longer friends with Dave Gibbons and told him never to contact him again. I remember him reading that. But that's what they wanted. They wanted sequels, which, I think they could pull off prequels, and it looks like they're trying to do that. I don't know if they could do sequels, though, and have them and pull it off. They set it up in the Watchmen movie with that it thing at the end with the Silk Spectre and Night Owl, you know, and talking to her mother and everything. It seemed like they set it up. But whether that would be any good, I don't know. The more I think about it, prequels are okay, though, you know, prequels usually screw things up. Case in point, Star Trek Enterprise. Don't get me started.
I don't think we did. Murray, did you start him? I didn't start him.
No, I'm just bringing that up. And
I'm wondering if they should have gone the sequel route, though. Like, prequels, yeah. It changed how people looked at comics, and it changed storytelling techniques and stuff. And it was like the way it told its story and the story it told totally reinvented the comics medium for a long, long time. And for them to be telling prequels, I don't know if they're going to be able to. I don't know. Like, I think with a sequel, you have more of a chance to reinvent the genre or reinvent the type of story that you're telling. Whereas with a prequel, maybe you can still do that, but you still have to kind of fit it into what we know is coming as readers, right? Whereas with a sequel, you can go off and tell any kind of story, and if it's good, you're making a whole reinvention again, and I don't know.
Well, okay. If you look at what's out there, the only one I think it's probably going to fit the best is the Minutemen one, because that part of Watchmen was the least
talked
about. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about those other characters that were prominent in Watchmen, I think that's where it's dangerous, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
But anyway.
They had to go prequel because the only two characters that are still alive at the end of Watchmen, or three, excuse me, are Manhattan, Night Owl, and Silk Spectre. Everyone else is dead.
Severely.
So they kind of had to do if they wanted to do a Rorschach story, it had to be before. If they they're not doing a comedian one, which I was a little surprised about, but.
They are.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it. All of the list of all of them.
Yeah. So I mean, the cynical part of it is that they had to do a prequel because you have to do the known characters, and since there's only three left, and one of them has gone off to, you know, contemplate his navel for eternity, it's a given that they had to do a prequel.
Yeah. Where is it?
My guess is if they came to more and they said, we want you to do more Watchmen stories, they could have done prequel. I mean, for goodness sake. But
yeah,
we're having fun with the unknowns here, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know.
I think it's Azzarello who's doing the comedian.
Cool.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And the Rorschach one as well. I'm trying to find it in here.
See, hear me here. I'm saying cool. I mean, it's
well, great. Yeah. At first I was put off on it because, you know, and you were talking about trying to it redefined the medium. I don't think I know, you know, well, Warner Brothers isn't, DC isn't really trying to do that. They're just trying to make more money off of that. The artists that got involved, okay, here we go. The creators that got involved might be another story. Okay, you got the Rorschach one is by Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo.
Cool.
You got the Minutemen, Darwin Cook. You got Comedian Brian Azzarello and J.G. Jones.
Whew.
And Silk Spectre, Darwin Cook, and Amanda Connor. That's going to be amazing. I'm looking forward to that one. And then Night Owl with JMS, Annie Kubert, and Joe Kubert. And Ozymandias, Lei Ween, and Jay Lee. And then Dr. Manhattan, J. Michael Straczynski, and Adam Hughes. So that's what you got.
Almost every name there jumps out and says, read me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So.
So I think Alan Moore shot himself in the foot here. And
he probably did.
He's fine with that, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Number 5. Marvel Man Spawn. Marvel Man may have been created way back in 1954, but it's still confusing just who owns the rights to the character. Portions of the rights have been owned at one time or another by Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore, Tom McFarlane, and oddly enough, the guy who actually created Marvel Man, Mick Anglo. Eventually, Marvel purchased rights from Anglo for his percentage of the character, and some Marvel Man stories have recently been reprinted. And has anybody talked about that since? That's me saying that. But because I think I bought one of those, and it was like I found out later it was when I actually got it, it was a reprint because I pre-ordered it, and it was like, you know, so. But anyway, it says, but for years the rest have been tied up in disputes with Todd McFarlane, who has also being sued by Gaiman over rights to various Spawn characters. According to Gaiman, he reached a verbal agreement with McFarlane over shared ownership. The legal dispute, which began in 2002, was just settled this year. Yeah.
I've never read a Marvel Man story.
I actually found one of the original Alan Moore ones at in a dollar bin. Well, it was pretty tore up, but it looked like it got water damage. I found it in like in a dollar bin when I was visiting my father-in-law, some comic shop I went to, and it was in there. It's just kind of cool to look at, but I don't think. Oh, yeah, here we go. Stan Lee versus Marvel, which he's got a lot of stuff going on. We'll talk about that in a minute. I'll have to find where I read that. But anyway, in 2002, Stan Lee filed a $10 million lawsuit alleging that Marvel Comics was cheating him out of millions of dollars in movie profits for the characters he created. This dispute specifically stemmed from the huge success of Spider-Man, a film that broke box office records but didn't make Lee a dime. He didn't get any money out of that? Holy crap. Because Lee knew there were upcoming film versions of other characters he created, including the X-Men, the Hulk, and Daredevil, which he didn't do any of that by himself, by the way, people. He asked for millions in compensation, just like Bob Kane didn't do Batman by himself. But, you know, he's gone, so we'll speak too ill of the dead. Anyway, 2005, Marvel announced it.
That's what's interesting, though. Like, Bob Kane's contract was, like, 1930s, 1940s,
mm-hmm.
which is like 20, 30 years before Alan Moore signed any Watchmen contracts.
Right. And
he was able to create some sort of contract that certainly did him well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. so they were able to create these amazing contracts in the 1940s and 30s mm-hmm. that would guarantee Bob Kane this notoriety and huge money from then on,
mm-hmm.
you would think that maybe people could have done it in the 80s as well if they were.
Well, the difference being that superhero genre and comic books had just started. And I'm sure they thought, yeah, okay, let's give him some of this. It's not going to – so what? It's just something that people are going to read for a little bit and, you know, go on. So meanwhile, 80s come along. Batman's been around for years. And you know, all this money been made off of them. So, you know, Marvel or DC was a little bit more.
Well, yeah, fair point.
You know, that's just my take on it.
But then it calls into question the statement of, you know, they didn't think that it would be around forever and ever. But clearly there's always been that in the back of, you know, Legal's mind.
Yes.
These things could be around forever and ever. So someone somewhere said, you know what, we can in fact screw these people out of future rights.
Right.
And again, that's a cynical statement, I know, but they didn't write those contracts not thinking about the future.
Well, they can't not. I mean, considering how – I mean, Batman's over – I mean, DC's been around over 75 years, and, you know, Batman's still out there. It's everywhere. And but, you know, anyway.
Well, you look at somebody like – okay, again, let's switch genres here for just a second.
Sure.
But you look at all of a sudden I'm blanking, but you look at like Bob Denver, Gilligan, okay?
Okay.
Again, switching genres. He and the whole Gilligan crew, they sign X, they got residuals for X number of showings of Gilligan's Island.
Okay.
Not knowing that the show was going to be in syndication for, I don't know, a zillion years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So they, you know, they eventually, they stop making money off of it. And Sherwood Schwartz, you know, starts taking 100% of the profits and so on and so forth. But they're, again, those were relatively new contracts because there's people who were doing shows, you know, Milton Berle, some of the guys who worked on the show of shows.
Right,
Berle, they still retain rights to some of the stuff that they did back then. So it's the same issue that this stuff existed. People at one point thought, hey, this stuff could potentially be around forever, so I want a piece of the action. And then some lawyer said, we don't have to do it because these people, they want to work more than they want to worry about the future.
Yeah, it just all comes down to the parties involved, really.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway.
So I'm not trying to compare Alan Moore to Gilligan, but it's a...
That's not bad. anyway, it says here on the Stanley versus Marvel. In 2005, Marvel announced it had settled all outstanding litigation with Lee, although the terms were not disclosed. In 2009, shareholders in Stan Lee Media Inc. filed suit, claiming Lee had promised them a share in profits from the characters he created. That lawsuit was dismissed by the court.
Yeah, because I don't think Stan Lee was involved in Stan Lee Media at that point.
Yeah, I think they kicked him out. I'm not positive about that, but you know,
it's hilarious.
Hold on here, I'm looking something up because he's got more lawsuits going on that I need to look at here, because I know he just recently lost a lawsuit trying to get the rights to Conan. Yeah, so I need to do a little bit more research on that.
Stan Lee was trying to get the
let's see, let me look here. Stan Lee,
that doesn't even seem in the realm of possibility.
I know, but I read that and I'm like, what? But yeah, yes, here it is. Stan Lee, this is on Entertainment Weekly. Stan Lee Media Inc. files Stan Lee Media Inc. files suit against Conan. Stan Lee Media Inc., a company founded by comic book legend Stan Lee, wants a judge to rule that it is still the rightful owner of the character Conan the Barbarian. In a lawsuit filed August 19th in federal court in L.A., obtained by Entertainment Weekly, SLMI is demanding 100% of film's proceeds. That's that recent one that my wife and I saw, and yeah, that was crap. The company claims its bankruptcy in 2001 would have prevented anyone from taking the rights to the Conan character away. In the suit, I guess they did have rights to it then. Stan Lee Media claims the company was betrayed by a former lawyer who made an illegal deal to transfer the rights to another company that would later greenlight this summer's Conan movie. This was, August of last year. Poorly reviewed remake earned $10 million on its opening weekend, barely beating the debut of the original Conan the Barbarian 19. Yeah, that wasn't that great of a movie. But yeah, and that, 5 days ago, they lose their lawsuit.
Do you think Stanley ever goes into a restaurant with a cockroach in a little plastic bag just to get out of pain for
I don't know, but my God, he is everywhere. He really is. But yeah, they try to get that. They're also working on getting the rights to Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, The Avengers, and other well-known properties. Stanley Media is trying to sue Stan Lee and others for transferring rights to from Stanley Media to Marvel improperly. So they're not even involving – I mean, Stan Lee isn't even involved in it. So, okay, I take that back. Stan Lee isn't suing them for the rights. Stanley Media Inc. is, whoever those people are.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, next up on our top 10 list is Fawcett Comics versus National Publications. This much publicized lawsuit was the first time comic fans saw Superman battle Captain Marvel, only it wasn't on the pages, which they're not going to call him Captain Marvel anymore. I remember reading that. The question was whether Captain Marvel and the Marvel family were being published in the violation of DC Superman copyright. At first, DC lost the battle in 1950, but an appeal went the other way. Eventually, Fawcett had to stop publishing comics starring Captain Marvel and paid a settlement of $400,000 to DC. Although DC later acquired the Fawcett characters, the lawsuit resulting in the once hugely popular character being absent from comics for decades, a circumstance that still haunts his popularity today, although DC is hoping to revive him yet again in March in Justice League. Yes.
I think there's some weird interpretations in that particular one. Like, I don't know that Fawcett lost the lawsuit so much as they just kind of decided to stop fighting it, I think.
Well, they might have ran out of money, yeah.
Well, like, I think when they – I'm trying to remember where I read it. But I always thought that it was – like, this was happening in the 50s, and just as – like, superheroes were on the decline, and yeah. Captain Marvel's sales were on the decline anyway. So I think rather than fight the continuing appeals, I think they just kind of stopped at some point and
– yeah. There's actually a wiki article on this very thing.
Yeah. I mean, it resulted in the same thing. Like, Captain Marvel was no longer produced, and they may have had to pay some sort of fine to DC, but yeah. Either way, he's coming back soon.
Yep.
And hopefully I'll like it.
Yeah. I liked what they did with him in the JSA when Johns was writing that.
Mm.
Well, until the way they ended it. But yeah, I liked some of that. Anyway, let's see.
I always liked what they did with Mary Marvel, but that's just, you know.
Oh, what, in Countdown? Thank God that's not in continuity anymore.
Dark Mary Marvel was incredibly cool.
Yeah, well, okay. Okay, we got Jack Kirby versus Marvel. The family of Jack Kirby, the man behind Thor, X-Men, and other lucrative Marvel characters, has been trying to claim copyrights on his creations in a lawsuit that has some fans threatening boycott. Kirby's estate is trying to terminate copyright grants of more than 45 characters that the legendary artist created and that Marvel constantly utilizes in comics and films. Marvel claims the characters were created as a quote-unquote work for hire and therefore are owned by Marvel. In July 2011, the court sided with Marvel, but lawyers are vowing to appeal the ruling. That's been all kinds of crap on the internet about that.
But this has been going on for decades.
Yes, it has. It has been. Yes, the seedy underbelly of comics.
It's again, it's the moral versus the legal. Legally,
oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Marvel owes Kirby nothing. Morally, they owe him everything.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. They do.
He is. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I don't like Kirby art, but I love Kirby creations.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Fantastic Four, X-Men, Hulk. I mean, Hulk is one of the coolest designs. It's so simple, but it's so cool.
Yeah.
Give the man his due, for Christ's sake. But, you know, Marvel can, just like they did with the, you know, with Friedrich, whatever, the Ghost Rider guy.
Yeah.
you know what? Sorry, guy. You signed a contract. Move on.
Yep. Okay. Sorry, no, that's fine.
I'm being a dick. I know. No.
It's not a black and white issue. You know, some of them are. I think the Walking Dead thing is a black and white. You know, well, I don't think, unless we hear more info, from why I'm sitting, it looks like, you know, Tony Moore is just causing a stink. But, you know, who knows? He might have every right to do what he's doing. So,
here it is. Here's where I found the, backing up to the Shazam thing. For anyone who's totally into like legal lawsuit stuff, pick up the book Comic Book Comics by and Ryan Dunleavy. It's a great series. It goes through the history of comics from.
That's on Comicology, by the way. I've bought all of those they put out.
Cool. I have to find the last issue. I picked up the last, but the fifth issue of their miniseries is the all lawsuit issue, and it details like.
I think I bought that.
It's the different legal issues that have gone on throughout the comics thing. And then for the Shazam thing, they say, okay, so DC appealed, and in 1952, there was a judge who reversed the original decision. He sided with DC. He was sending the case back to trial court for a determination of damages. Okay, so by this time, superhero sales were tanking, including Caps, and the Wortham witch hunts were gaining ground there, and Fawcett had been experimenting with mass market paperbacks, including like Mickey Spillane's lurid Mike Hammer stories and stuff. So Fawcett decided that determining further battle with DC would be futile. Fawcett settled the case in 1953 and canceled its entire comics line to focus instead on paperback prose. So yeah, they kind of gave up, but not because they felt DC was right, but just because it was timing and all sorts of other things that got in their way there.
Yep. Yeah, I sent you guys a link. They have all six issues on Comicology for 99 cents a piece, and including the all lawsuit issue that you just mentioned.
99 cents? That is a bargain. It is a great, great series.
Yeah, I have all of them. I haven't read them all. I'm going to purchase the sixth one right now.
Get into it.
Yeah,
lots of words.
I read the because they have a free one, and I read that first, and if you like it, then you can get the other, and it's good stuff.
It really is good. Yeah, it's a good series.
So
very good.
And you can't beat that price either.
Totally no.
How is there not a comic book union? I just don't get it. Whatever. Sorry.
They've talked about that before. I remember.
Whatever. It's a little mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Given how often these things come up, I mean, it's not like this is a one-time thing with Kirby or one-time thing with Stan Lee. Or this is constant.
The thing is,
where's the comic book's Norma Rae, for Christ's sake?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, with so many people out there, and they're going out of the country a lot now, there's no way that would ever stick. I don't think, because you have to get everybody in and signed up. You know,
that's not true. That's not true. But you just have to have a group of people who are willing to gather together and support each other, and it works. I mean, you look at there's all these small little groups out there that do that, and what they need to do is bring their power together and so on and so forth. But power to the people.
They tried that though at DC, didn't they, in the 60s, and that's when they ended up losing, like, I know Arnold Drake was involved in something, and I want to say Gardner Fox and stuff, and they tried to like negotiate for better pay or better working conditions, and they ended up kicked to the curb.
Well, they got blacklisted for Jeez.
Well, kind of like they were, like that was the end of their time at DC then, and I think some of them maybe got some work at Marvel, but others, I'd have to dig out more info on that. But I know I've read interviews where Arnold Drake has talked about that time in the 60s where they tried to not really unionize, but at least band together and ask for better pay, and didn't work for them.
Yeah. That's, I've heard of that more than once. So.
Sad. Okay.
Let's see. Last one we got on here is the Sigel Schuster versus DC. Now this one.
Siegel.
Excuse me. I always say that wrong. This one, these kids were 17 years old. I mean, well, I see in 48, they were probably a little bit older, but they, I mean, you know, okay. It says here, 1948, Jerry Siegel and Joe Schuster created litigation against DC over the copyright to their creations, Superman and Superboy. While DC won the case in case for Superman, they lost the one for Superboy, and eventually they settled with the two creators. In 1970, the initial copyright period expired, and they all returned to court, but DC won that time. But in 1976, Congress passed the 1976 Copyright Act to allow creators to take back certain copyrighted works, which opened the door for more disagreements over the characters. Most recently, Siegel's wife and daughter initiated a lawsuit against DC, and the window will open in 2013 for the Schuster estate to do the same. At one point a few years ago, DC even avoided using the name Superboy in its comics because of the pending litigation. That was during Infinite Crisis and such, I believe. They have been a slew of legal maneuvers since, and DC even filed suit against the lawyer representing the Siegel and Schuster families, making the case one of the longest running and arguably the ugliest creative disputes in comic book history. Yeah, I've read some details back and forth over that. It ain't pretty. Really isn't. Wow.
Who are we supposed to feel sorry for here?
The
creators.
Well, I mean, when they signed their rights over, they were like 17, I think. You know? And of course, but who ever thought that this would get up to that point? And of course, by 1948, it was evident how big Superman was, I'm sure. So, I don't know. I don't know the details of the case, but I've read some things that Warner Brothers has done. And this is pretty shady, unethical even. But you know, that's the thing. So,
well, what are they? Do they want full? I mean, in this case, do they want full rights back, and then DC just says, "Okay, good luck publishing," or what?
That's what it seems like. I mean, that's what they want. They want full. I mean. Full rights, yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why they have done what they did in the New 52 with Superman is to make that harder for them, but I don't have any proof of that. I don't know, like I said, I don't know the details of it. There's plenty of stuff out there about it, I'm sure. But anyway,
Well, even in that article, they talk about Superboy was no longer used by DC, or they mm-hmm. like DC has never ever come out and said that. They're never going to come out and say that. Like that's I think Newsarama making a bit of a presumption. I mean, not that.
Well,
it's
I remember. I seem to remember Didio even saying something about that, but you know.
I don't know. Like, I mean, it's possible. It certainly makes sense that this is why we got Connor Kent and we got his weird uniform and why he was killed off for a little. Like, all that makes sense, but I don't know that they've ever.
Well, it was more evident with the Superboy and Superboy Prime, where they changed his name to Superman Prime.
Right.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. You're still ill. Like I said, I don't know all the details, but it's been going on for quite a while, so I'm sure. I mean,
there's been copyright discussion, copyright law discussion since 1790.
Yeah, it's true.
Since 1790. So we're talking 200 years of precedent. It's it's come up. It looks like about every 30 or 40 years, mm-hmm. artistic rights. Heck, there's even the Sonny Bono Act of 1998, signed into law by Bill Clinton. It's a digital rights. I don't know. It seems like the U.S. government is, they try, but there's still these contracts that exist, and you can't retroactively say these contracts are no good just because there's new rights protecting people. I feel bad for them, and I would love to see these companies that we've supported all these years step up and do the right thing, or these creators.
I believe, I don't know if it was Siegel or Schuster, but I think it was – I don't remember which one, but I know Brad Metzler has done a lot with this because he had a big thing to save, I believe it was Siegel's house, boyhood home. And but one of them died completely penniless. And any way you look at it, they created something like that and they made Warner Brothers all that money. They should have had at least something.
Yep.
I mean, just out of human decency, given so many people such a, so much entertainment to die with with nothing. So, anyway.
And then it all kind of spirals. Then we look at like someone like Alan Moore or Tony Moore, mm-hmm. who probably are not going to die penniless. No. I don't think Alan Moore is going to be – there's any jeopardy of this guy.
No, he could do a manual copy of a phone book on the paper and probably sell it.
Yeah, there you go. See, and I don't know Tony Moore's situation. I mean, he may be living in, his parents' house for all I know. But, if he's talented, we look at the guys nowadays, if you've got talent, create something else. And I'm not saying he should let go of his lawsuit. And I'm not saying any of these guys should let go of their lawsuits. But don't stop doing everything else to focus on that. Because it's like what happened with this, Gary Friedrichs, whatever. Again, I keep screwing up his name, but the Ghostwriter guy, he kind of put all his eggs in one basket with this lawsuit, and it didn't work out. So the hope is that, Tony Moore's not doing that,
Now, speaking of that, is that the same Tony Moore that did was it Love and Rockets and all that?
No, that's not Tony Moore. That's what's his name? Murray, you should know this one. Love and Rockets, Moore.
I was gonna say
Rachel Rising was the latest thing he did, and did.
That's Carrie Moore.
Carrie, that's why I'm getting. I knew it was started with a T anyway. Okay, I'm getting mixed up.
Tony Moore, I think he was on I think he's done a couple of issues of Venom and stuff, and he's certainly doing he's doing lots of stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not, he's not sitting around just waiting, but.
Yeah, he's done, exactly. He did some issues of Venom. You're absolutely right. He did some issues of Punisher.
He did, that run when Punisher was cool, Frankenstein-y and stuff.
He's the creator of Fear Agent.
Mm-hmm.
He did Franken Punisher? Okay, all right.
I just pulled up his thing with his penciler writer. Oh, wait, no, maybe he didn't create it because he's not the writer. He was writer of Battle Pope, Crawl Space, Triple X Zombies. That sounds interesting. Oh, wow, he's a lot younger than I thought. But penciler, there's Ghost Rider, Franken Castle, Fear Agent, Exterminators, some Brit stuff, that 9/11 comic a while back, Vertigo First Cut, Western Tales of Terror from 2004, and he's inked a bunch of stuff, and then colorist and cover artist as well, so. Yes.
Oh, he did some Western Tales of Terror, no shit.
Yeah, he is the creator of Fear Agent. I was right. It says they're up here.
So, you know, okay, so he's not putting all his eggs in one basket, but he, yeah. Get a contract with Marvel and move on.
sorry. And be screwed over by the big guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to get screwed over by someone with money.
You don't think Kirkman's got money?
He does now.
Yeah. He's still, yeah, the Invincible is even going downhill. He's spending all his time with the other, I think. It was really, really, really late, and I'd been ordering it off of DCBS for a long time, and one of my last shipments from them had like 5 issues of the comic. Just in time for the latest one to come out on Comicology, which I haven't bought yet. But anyway, yeah, that any way you look at it, it's a sticky issue for sure. Oh.
And he also did some of the design work for Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. Cool.
Okay.
Sorry. Great movie, by the way. Need to see it. You have to see Tucker and Dale vs. Evil.
All right.
You would appreciate it most of all, Chris.
Okay. What's the name of it again?
It's called Tucker and Dale vs. Evil.
Okay. I'll have to look that up.
Again, it is a... You will appreciate it because it is... it's your people, man.
All right. Oh, I see it. See the IMDb for it. Here. It is strange. Yeah, okay. Oh, my people? Oh, those aren't my people. I just live here. Though I do like some of the pictures I'm seeing.
It is great stuff.
Yeah, interesting.
But he did some of the, some of the design work, so.
That's cool.
Totally off subject.
Oh, Alan Tudyk is in it.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Okay, well, then in that case, I might have to see it.
It's
I love that guy. He's awesome.
It's very funny stuff.
Well, let's see. Anything else?
No.
A lot of talk about Night of Owls coming up in a Batman thing, and which I'm almost getting tired of it already because they're like every other blog post is, oh, here's the design of the talent from the 1770s, and here's the design for the 1840s version. It's like, okay, enough. Here's the design for the 1660s version. Jeez.
The prime and the pump.
It could be worse. They could be putting banners on all of the books like they're doing with the Marvel stuff with Avengers versus X-Men.
Yeah, that's true.
2 months, 3 days,
yeah,
4 hours.
They're even going to have a Talon attack Jonah Hex in All-Star Western.
Right.
Oh, boy.
He'll make short work of that guy.
Yeah, well, actually, it's a female. That's
what
it is. Oh. Yeah, it shows the cover. It's a woman. Definitely a woman. If not, that's the skinniest and bumpiest man I've ever seen.
Bumpiest.
In places that you wouldn't expect bumps. All right. What else? Anything else you guys want to talk about? I can't think of any other big news really.
No. I'd like to do the Marvel thing next week. I even think we might have someone else who might want to join us for that conversation. So,
hey, that's fine. You got a challenge? You said about that.
one of our listeners, Jonathan. I'm blanking on his last name, dude. I'm sorry. But he
was it on our page.
Yeah.
I missed it.
No, it wasn't. He IM'd me through Facebook.
Okay.
But he thinks that we need to do a little more Marvel talk. So,
that's fine.
Yeah, we've probably been slack.
Well, of my own admission, the only thing I really read is Punisher and Daredevil. But I have a very large amount of
you have a very large trades. What?
Large amount of Spider-Man trades I haven't read. So maybe I should read some of those. Get caught up.
And, you know, we all have been weaned on Marvel at one point or another, so it's not like we have to simply talk about what Marvel is doing today. It's David. I'm sorry, David. Jesus. Oh, my God. Don't talk when I'm sick. That's
David Theobald?
Yes. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, because I see him in here with asking about other superhero stuff from beyond DC and Marvel.
Yes. I don't know why I thought it was Jonathan. Never mind. Oh, man. Okay, fever's back. That's clear.
Man, you need to get some rest.
I'm trying. I took 4 days off out of the last 10 days of work. So.
Wow. I had to do that when I got sick that while back.
Well, anyhow, I'm sorry. I'd like to, you know, David wants to participate, so we may have a guest speaker next week.
That's just fine.
Guest lecturer.
That's perfect. We'll find out what kind of stuff theme we want to do. Anybody has any? Hey, that brings us into how you can contact us. If you have some Marvel stuff you want to talk about, give us a holler at podcast at talesfromthelawnbox.com or harangue one of us on Facebook, on the Facebook page. Just do a little searchy for Tales from the Lawnbox on Facebook. We're the only one there. If there is, then let me know because then I'll get a lawsuit going.
Totally. Copyright.
And then,
where's that trademark? I don't know.
But then
I have to boycott us. I'm sorry.
Well, see that they might not have to. Maybe go around and boycott the people that, I don't know. We'll figure that out if it happens. Anyway, I need to go searching right now. you can contact us there. Or let's see, sometimes a message in a bottle will work, even though I'm nowhere near any of body water. But you all right there, man?
Yes.
Okay.
Turning on a light.
Oh, that's. I thought that was Caleb coughing.
Anyway, no, that was Murray, man.
I was like, oh my God, are you okay? anyway, that's how you can get a hold of us. The Facebook page is a real good way to do it. Lots of traffic on there. We're up to 63 whole people, which is pretty good.
Wow, we kept this under an hour and a half this week. Look at us.
Yeah, I know. that's what happens when you just ramble, I think.
Okay, cool.
But anyway, that's it. And we'll talk to you next week. Hopefully we'll be talking about Marvel, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Just all right.
Aaron, we'll get some stuff together a little earlier instead of Friday evening, I think, is when we got this all lined out this time. But anyway, that is it for this week, and we'll talk to you soon. Good night.
See you later.
Goodbye.